believe we have a quorum present, so I'm going to call this meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board to order. And I think we'll begin, as we always do, with introductions, and we'll start with Assistant Chief Dickinson first, I think. Want to introduce yourself, or just do the usual, Paul?
Sorry. Good evening, Assistant Chief Dickinson, CPD.
Denise Blazek, member of the board.
Harry Castello, member of the board.
Stephanie Yocum, member of the board.
Jamie Thornsberry, board member.
Doug Hunt, board chair.
Steve Jeffrey, vice chair.
Xavier Scruggs, board member.
Stephanie Coleman, board member.
Rose Wibbenmeyer, law department.
Peyton Oliver, city management fellow.
Matt Unrein, deputy city manager.
Thank you. I think everybody's had a chance to look at the minutes from the previous meeting. Let's take the open meeting minutes first.
You have to approve them.
Pardon? Oh, pardon me. That's right. I thank you very much. A little spaced out. First, we need to have a motion to approve the agenda.
Motion to approve.
Second.
I think that's a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, good. Do I hear a motion to approve the draft minutes of the last board meeting?
Make a motion.
Jamie moved and Steph seconded.
No.
No. Oh, all right. So there's a lot of voices not yet. That was, yeah.
I'll be louder.
Good. All right. It's been moved and seconded to accept the, to approve the minutes of the last meeting. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. And draft closed meeting minutes were sent out, and I think everybody's probably had a chance to look at those. Do I hear a motion to accept the draft minutes of the
Coleman,
closed meeting?
Motion to accept.
Second thought.
Yep. All right. It's been moved and seconded to accept the draft closed meeting minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? All right. So our special item I see is a report on status of technology exploration, and Assistant Chief Dickinson is on our agenda for that. Have you got an update for us, Paul?
There's no updates. We're still where we were last time.
Okay. So in a sense, it's no dates, and part of the problem is getting firm numbers on costs and getting them approved.
We have the numbers on the cost, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I guess I can provide an update. The technology was presented to the city manager in his budget meeting with the police chief, and the city manager gave approval for that to be moving forward into the draft budget. So the cost for the new technology is in the proposed budget.
Okay.
Oh, thanks.
Good. Good, good. And I mean, in a sense, have you got a sense, Matt, when the action might be taken on that?
Pardon. The hearings are ongoing. The budget hearings are ongoing, and so there will be another budget hearing on the 19th.
Uh-huh.
And so, obviously, you as the chair or any member of your co-members can send a recommendation or can attend in person and, you know, convey your wishes or your encouragement or whatever.
Okay. Thank you.
That's something we took very seriously, so it is, yeah. It's included.
Good. Good. All right. Old business, and this is an item that may take us a while, and I'm going to suggest that when we start on this item, that is the Senate Bill 754 and the board's recommendations on its impact, although, as you know, and I think it went out to all of you, I have drafted up this long motion. I think it would be better, you know, not following Robert's Rules of Orders exactly, but to see if members of the board have comments they want to make in general about our response to the Senate bill, because I know people have been doing some thinking about it, and I just am curious about what we might have to say before we plunge into detail.
I just had one question. I know Reese isn't here, to he might have more insight. But did we know what St. Louis did in regards to their response to the Senate bill?
I do not know what they did.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you were saying.
Oh, I was asking about what St. Louis, their oversight, do we know? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand, and you may as well, but I don't have clear information on this, that in a way the impetus for this came out of St. Louis, right? And it came out of the Police Officers Association there. So, yeah. Okay. So it would be interesting to see the response, but I haven't heard what they're doing.
I was just kind of curious, because in your proposal you talked about putting it into two separate boards, and I like the idea of it. I'm just wondering logistically, and you know, based on this bill in the first place, is that something that they would still see as one, or can it be split into those two?
Talked about the population of both boards. Would it be all of us on a second board or new members? So that's a good point.
The general picture I would give on that is, and those of you who looked at the council meeting and the staff report in the council meeting, there is quite a bit of skepticism on the part of city staff about whether two boards can exist. In order to try to understand the situation better, after our last meeting, you know, when in a way all of us were sort of stunned and trying to figure out how to respond to this, I did meet with a representative of the Police Officers Association. I did meet with a national consultant who has a law degree and has been a policeman, national consultant for NACOL. They seem to believe that the two-board solution would be possible. But at this point, I don't think the legal office here thinks that it's possible. It's a question of how that the wording in the bill is interpreted. And I think there can be legitimate dispute about how the wording in the bill is. So the question of whether it can be done in the first place is still to some degree in the air. And then in informal discussions with several people, there's been talk about, can the boards be identical? And I think that, again, in my informal discussions, including with the discussion with the national consultant, he said you're going to meet a lot of resistance on that. Really just doing exactly the same board. I don't know what the reaction of the local Police Officers Association would be to that exactly, although I don't think, from what I've heard, there'd be resistance to two boards. But the intermediate position that I've heard mooted is that there might be overlap between the two boards, so that the people who are hearing appeals and whatnot can give the benefit of their thinking, so to speak, to the second board, but do so without revealing the identity of any particular officers or particular citizens. Just these are the impressions from doing things that we're getting. So none of that is solved. none of the question of how these boards would be composed is solved. I think one of the things that city staff has been working very hard to do is, how do we keep the present CPRB able to function while we investigate the question of what do we do about the functions that are lost? There are differing views, and it's going to take a little while to sort it out a little bit. We can get into details when we're looking at the details of the motion, but I think that's where we are. It's not a done deal that it's even possible to do the two. I would be glad, again, I feel awkward too much taking the lead without people interrupting me frequently, in particular with such a long motion. And what I'm going to, unlike my usual procedure on longer motions, I'm not going to break it into pieces. And I'm going to try to get us to consider it as a whole. If we go back and decide we're not happy with the piece, then we can certainly change it. An advantage of the fact that we seem to be having an additional meeting is that if we're hung up on something, we might get a second chance to look and say, you know, we were undecided on that. We've had some time to think about it. So
Doug, can you speak on the city council meeting? I didn't get to watch it. I wasn't there. Were you a part of that?
I was not a part of that. I watched the meeting and read the documents involved, but I was not.
Can you give?
If you go to the recording for the last city council meeting, it's toward the end of the meeting. I do not feel Nancy had much faith in the board to continue its services, and I feel.
In this board?
Yes.
This board?
I feel Nancy did not relay the message that we intended to create as a board and did not reflect our interests as a board. So that's also why I think it's important to continue with this conversation publicly.
And that was going to be my question of, can we still, even if we can't split into two different groups, do we still think we can still be in accordance with the law
function
and still be a board?
Where I think we are on that, Xavier, is that both the memo that was sent to the council and this motion that I've got on the floor sort of talk about this. Some functions would be lost under that bill, and my short summary of what those functions are, and in fact, Nick Foster actually used this phrase in the council discussion, the public-facing side of the board, where we host discussions of policy, make recommendations on policy in a very public way, that is the very significant piece that vanishes. So I want to be careful about this because there can be real dispute about exactly where we stand, but it seems that what it would do in terms of organized functions of this board is it can do what we do in closed session. And most of what we do in open session vanishes, essentially. Although, as somebody pointed out to me just yesterday, citizens have free speech. And we always, at our board meetings, have opportunities for public or staff or board members to express an opinion. So we could express personal opinions about things that are going on at that point, but I don't think we would be allowed to take a vote making a recommendation on any matters of policy. That's at least the way that I understand it under the new bill. So.
Okay. Mouthful.
It's a mouthful. And again, I almost feel like I need to apologize for thinking about this as hard as I've been thinking about it, because I feel like I'm now going to like be putting some things out there. But the spirit of that is let's discuss these, and take them apart. So again, this is the proposed motion. I'll go ahead and make the motion now, so we're kind of back on the Robert's Rules of Order. No, I won't, because I want to discuss it one at a time, and then I'll make it as a motion as a whole. So let's go through it. So Columbia's Citizens Police Review Board recommends the City Council take the following three actions in response to SB 751 recently signed into Missouri law. One, replace the CPRB with two civilian oversight boards, the first concerned with police department policy, the second with the conduct of individual police officers. Okay, so with that much, I think we've already discussed and put on the table. And then the second one is very important. To avoid conflict with SB 754, make it clear that the policy board will never recommend disciplinary actions against individual officers. Its duties will be. So we've got one board working, as we might put it, in a tight box. We are just looking here and seeing, is this an instance of misconduct on the part of a particular officer? And yes, that's a closed session sort of thing. And, we don't do that sort of work publicly. So the policy board will never recommend disciplinary actions against individual officers. Its duties will be to host public meetings and educational programs on matters of CPT policies and practices, to review and make recommendations to the police chief and city manager on police department policies, procedures, and trainings, to educate itself on the practical effects of policies, procedures, and training by conducting annual reviews of police department records regarding citizens' complaints and their resolution. And I will pause to say that city legal has some doubts about whether we can do that. I'm not convinced one way or another. I want to remind you that as with the staff making a recommendation to the City Council, we're making a recommendation to the City Council. And if those recommendations differ, it's very much up to the City Council to decide what to do. So in these areas that are still in dispute, we can still make a recommendation. Okay, then next duty, to prepare and submit to the City Council annual reports that analyze those complaints and the way they were resolved, including demographic data, but excluding information that personally identifies particular officers and citizens. There's the protection for the police officers from public exposure, right, built in there. And then to prepare and submit to the City Council summaries of other public input it receives and to suggest ways that the CPD can best address this input. So I'm imagining, for instance, if the policy board is holding a public session and soliciting public input and maybe even doing something like a panel discussion where there are a range of views there, we can, you know, give information to the City Council to do that.
Doug, I have a question.
Yes.
So to me, what it sounds like is we have two different boards here, but they can't both be civilian oversight boards, right? Because that's part of the problem. Saying an oversight board can't do these things.
This is literally, Harry, a legalistic discussion that I was involved in quite a bit yesterday, but that I also had with two lawyers before. And some lawyers say, no, that if you actually look at the wording of the first paragraph of the bill, it's clearly only to govern boards when they are doing discipline things against particular officers. Is not to do any, say you can't do something else with another board.
It's not the fact that it's an oversight board. It's just that what it's doing specifically.
That's my interpretation and the interpretation of at least two of the lawyers that I've talked to. At least two of the lawyers that I've talked to disagree. So again, we're making recommendations to the City Council, but that has to be hashed out before they can decide what it's possible to do.
And I will point out, if there were to be a policy board, the policy board would not have access to any closed records. So they couldn't review the files. They would have no access.
That's pretty impotent. I'm not quite sure when less eyeballs on a problem has ever been a good idea.
You mentioned that too, Rose, and you said it was impossible. I was unclear why it was impossible. Is it a matter of state law that makes it impossible?
It is a matter of state law. And those records were closed by the Police Officer's Bill of Rights at 59502. So if a policy board exists, the policy board has no role in the civilian oversight process, and it's only the civilian oversight boards who can access those closed record information with regard to a complaint under the new law in those four narrow categories.
Right. And this, I think, Stephen, might go to the question that you raised early about the membership of the two boards. Mm-hmm. And again, there's the possibility, I think that the resistance met to identical boards would be so overwhelming that it would not be worth taking on. But one of the things that has certainly occurred to me is, if you've got the conduct board doing regular reviews and noticing patterns, might they not be able to communicate to the policy board, we're seeing this going on, maybe you guys need to look at that. That could make a lot of difference by itself. I worry, I'm going to get my worries on the table, which may not be everybody else's. I worry very much in the grounds that Steph is talking about, that if you're going to try to discuss policy and you never see where the rubber meets the road, where policies actually play out, it's hard to make an informed thing. Now, there might be ways to work around that. Very often, trainings are based on scenarios, for instance. Scenarios could grow out of, for instance, what the discipline board sees. You know, we're seeing this sort of thing going on. Can we work through a scenario? Or, you know, we might find some way to work with that, but it's a real bone of contention. And again, the spirit of my presenting this is, if we want to strike something out, we strike something out. But maybe what we do is look at the whole and then return. So I hope everybody's making notes about anything they're uneasy with as we go.
So, Rose, are you saying that the one that says to prepare and submit the annual reports that analyze the complaints, that board could not do that?
Right, because they could not. A policy board that has no role in civilian oversight of complaints against police officers would have no access to any complaint information.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what they would see would be the public records as to numbers of complaints that the police department, if they issued those public records, where it's just a category and a number, that's all they would get. They would not be able to look at the videos. They would not be able to look at the reports. Have all the access that you all have as being a true civilian oversight board.
The and I had not, because I never had that number cited to me before, I've not looked at 595.02. And so I would like to take a look at it. And again, I want to go with what the board as a whole recommends. I want to remind you, though, that all we're doing is making a recommendation to the city council. And so I think what we're trying to do is express what we understand the wishes of the citizenry to be here. And if the city council says, well, you just can't do that because it's a violation of state law, they can certainly say that. So I think we need to decide what we feel like we should be recommending, paying attention to what's just impossible, but not concluding ahead of time that something's impossible, since staff can look at it, city council can look at it, and
there are many other municipalities across America. NACOL exists as a resource that we can contact and, you know, work with to find alternative solutions to go ahead and be able to provide the oversight that civilians feel that they need.
And I guess what I would say I am profoundly merely speaking for myself and not trying to decide anything with the board. My inclination with regard to that item would be to leave it in with the understanding that it might be stricken and that a fallback position might be general guidance coming from the discipline board about the sort of things that the policy board might be looking at. We might, you know, we might try something like that. But sometimes you want to put on the tape what you'd like to see. But again, I don't insist on that. And in fact, let's pause right there. Would anybody like to strike that from our list of duties on the interim?
I don't know if I want to strike it, but I want it to be the best proposal to give them so they really will consider it. I don't want them to see that one and be like, oh, no, never mind. We're not even going to read the rest because that one doesn't make sense because of the law or whatever. So I don't know if it just needs a note or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I don't
exactly want them to be like, oh, nope, never mind.
And I think it's a very good point. Might I suggest this? But this is something that we talked about before. Since we are meeting again, why don't we pull that out in terms of making a decision on that tonight so we've got some time to look at it, and we might be returning to, you know, this item or this item. You know, we might have a few items that we want to return to tomorrow before we finalize the motion, and that would give us a chance to think about it harder and look and decide what we're comfortable with. So does that seem okay? What I'm going to do then, I'm going to accept as a friendly amendment from you the what I'm going to describe as the temporary removal of that, and then we can decide whether we want to restore it.
Or maybe it's a rewording of like, or, if
yeah,
possible,
reword.
I don't know. You know.
Yeah, right.
That's what I was thinking. Is yeah. Add a caveat at the
maybe
end.
Maybe at the bottom, like a
if
possibility.
Allowed by,
yeah.
If allowed by SB such and such.
Excellent. I think
if
that,
allowed
in
by.
Fact, maybe we should just do that right now.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's really that simple, isn't it, Harry, that we could just add to the end of that sentence, and there is an if allowed by SB 754.
Yeah, we want to ask for what we want, and then take what we
want. Yeah, and then maybe even down below where you kind of say we want to be clear about what we're trying to accomplish. Like, we understand not all these things may be possible. We would like each one considered or, you know, whatever
good.
That sounds like.
And I think that becomes an expression of a wish that we recognize might not be granted under the circumstances.
Yeah.
But
right.
Excellent choice. I think we're happy made with that. Shall we move on to number three, or we still want some discussion of number two, which is to say the policy? Number three, so action number three. Make it clear that the conduct board's duties will be consistent with SB 754. Those duties which were required to meet primarily in closed session will be, and this is exactly on our list already, to receive and investigate the merit of appeals from citizens who are dissatisfied with the police chief's preliminary findings on complaints involving, but here our list changes, excessive use of force, abuse of authority, discourtesy, or use of offensive language, because those are the things specified by the bill. I think you'll remember our discussion of that. And then second duty, to submit its findings on these appeals, including any recommendations on disciplinary action, to the chief of police, and if Senate Bill 754 allows, to the city manager, and to do so in a timely way so that all investigations can be completed within the time limits imposed by state law. If you look at the literal wording of the bill, it says we report to the police chief. Whether there is an implication that we can also report to the city manager is something that, you know, needs to be done, or there might be ways that we can get our word to the city manager indirectly. So this is very much in the spirit of our amendment of the previous one. We're saying if it's possible, we'd like to get to the. Okay, so that's the literal recommendations, and in a real sense, that's the motion, except that I'm so afraid of being misunderstood by the city council that I would like to attach rationale. And that's why I went ahead and included these items. And again, we may find that we don't entirely agree on rationale. So we want to be clear about what we're trying to accomplish here. We don't think the city's response to SB 754 needs to become a source of contention between advocates of civilian oversight and advocates of police officers' rights. By separating policy-level oversight from conduct-level oversight, we can simultaneously assure officers that they will be protected from unfair or ill-informed disciplinary treatment by civilian overseers and assure citizens that they will have meaningful input in shaping the CPD's policies and practices. I'm going to pause to make one comment there. I don't know how you all were feeling at the end of the previous meeting, but I was feeling overwhelmed and somewhat heated, actually. And then I began to do this thing that I have always told my students do. You know, if you're going to write an argumentative paper, write the argument for the other side first. And so I started thinking about the real purpose of SB 754 in terms of protecting police officers. And I thought, you know, this is one of those things where you've got workers who need to have their rights protected. They're doing a very stressful job. The public conversation around policing is so heated that if I were a police officer, I would be worried that the heat of public conversation would affect the judgment, which is supposed to be by the book. You know, was this done by the book? So I'm very sympathetic with what 754 is trying to do. This is not an opposition to 754. This is not a workaround of 754. Let's let 754 do its work, is the way that I'm feeling about it. So long as there is another avenue for citizens to express their feeling about what the policy should be, the discipline board can make sure that the policies are followed. But what those policies should be is a different question. So let's stop there and see if we're comfortable with that formulation.
I thought that was well made.
And then I do begin to speculate, and I guess if I were not operating late at night, I might not have, but I'll go ahead and put it in. Relieved of the present CPRB's duty of hearing appeals, the policy board could and should be more ambitious than the CPRB has been in its educational and outreach efforts. It might, for instance, host and design carefully moderated and balanced discussions of policy-level issues that frequently strain relations between the department and the public, such as searches and seizures, uses of force, and responses to mental health crises. I mean, these keep coming up in public discussions, and I'm going to put out a dream vision here, which is not necessarily part of the motion. Imagine that the conduct board, in addition to holding monthly meetings, as a theme of the quarter. Here's an area of predictable conflict and difficulty. Let's get people who see it differently together. Let's have a public discussion. Let's have maybe a panel up here and really get it discussed. You know, that's the vision. Now, when I think about that, that is in a way superfluous to the motion, but I like leaving it in. but I'll leave that. We can strike it if we wish. Okay, we'll leave it in for now and we can return. Okay. The above recommendations are based on the assumption that having two oversight boards with cleanly separated missions would present no conflict with SB 754. And I must say that is a disputed assumption. We have discussed this two-board solution informally with lawyers, and I have discussed it with lawyers, but I'm going to ask you to believe me when I say that I have. including one national consultant on police policies and one representative of police officers union. Neither objected to the two-board solution, and so we were surprised to hear the head of Columbia's law department oppose the two-board solution at the August 5th, 2024 meeting of the city council. There, and again, lawyers can disagree, but it was like, I was sort of surprised that this was just stated as impossible after talking to other lawyers who seemed to think it was possible. And then I'll go ahead and read it. And again, we can change this, we can strike it, well, but we'll finish this section. We suspect that our opposition was based on a misunderstanding of CPRB's intention in advocating such a solution. If you go back and listen to what was actually said, I think you'll see the sense of that. This is not, as her comments implied, an attempt to circumvent SB 754. I want to make that clear. But an attempt to comply with it. Is an attempt to comply with it in a way that preserves the opportunity for citizens appointed by elected representatives to orchestrate meaningful public discussions of crucial police policies. Let that sit for just a bit, and then I'm going to add one more comment, then I'm going to pause, because I really want to get some feedback from people. In talking to some people about, and you know, very much the question of what's happening in St. Louis is a good one. One of the things I'd like to believe about Columbia is that when things are difficult for municipalities to do all over the state, and things are looking like dark and complex and everything like that, we can take advantage of what appears to be a crisis and see it as an opportunity and actually do something that might actually improve the situation instead of merely salvage what we can salvage. And you know, that's the reason that I put those things in there. But again, I feel almost like I'm, I don't know. Any comments on that section before we? Okay. And then the next one, I've got qualms about myself to some degree, but I'm going to go ahead and read it and we can. Should the council decide that the two-board solution described above is not feasible, we would urge you to consider a second alternative. Eliminate the discipline board entirely, so that Columbia will have no entity appointed by a local government body with the authority to investigate allegations of misconduct by local law enforcement officers toward members of the public. That would make it logically impossible for Columbia's system of civilian oversight to be in conflict with SB 751. I believe that to be true, partly on the basis of my long years of teaching writing and seeing how that bill is written, but other people might disagree with it. Eliminating the board would be a heavy lift and a mistake, except there was talk at the city council meeting about how we're getting a new assistant city manager to work on police and fire issues. And it occurs to me that if we have to leave either discipline or policy out of what citizens are allowed to do, I'd prefer to turn the discipline over to somebody from the city rather than the policy. Citizens having input on policy seems very important. So that's the sense of why that's in there. At that point, the city council would be free to appoint a policy board that can act robustly and publicly. The present members of the CPRB feel that having, and this is, you've really got to decide whether you're on board with this. The present members feel of the CPRB feel that having citizens concentrate their attention on policy matters is more productive than having it pass judgments on the behaviors of individual officers. Citizen input on the effectiveness of the entire system is far more crucial than citizen input on the conduct of some particular officer. And in a way, I'd say that closing paragraph is actually the argument for the whole, you know. Now, I don't know what you guys want to do with that. I mean, yes.
Since you mentioned that the city has already looked at the two-board solution and rejected it, did they look at this version that you had laid out?
This is new.
This is new.
They haven't seen
new.
This.
So,
this was about 2 minutes of Nancy so just the talking August, verbally at the
okay,
meeting.
It was just, it was a quick, oh, so it wasn't really thought out or discussed at any length.
Well,
okay, because I was wondering then what, if we were just going to plan on bringing it up again. We know you said no, but let's ask again.
And that's a fair question. And I guess I would say that it's somewhere in between. If you'll recall, the motion that we passed last time had the very briefest description of what a two-board system would look like.
Right, so they didn't see it like this.
That's what was looked at. And there was no discussion of the rationale behind going through a two-board solution. And I had the impression that the discussion was assuming that we were trying to get around the Senate bill instead of that we were actually trying to improve the system.
And be proactive.
So it's not that it will be the first look by any means that the city council has, but it will be a more thorough look.
Okay.
Thank you.
Could we also add in here, this is me still holding out hope here, if St. Louis is still able to keep their board intact in some way, somehow, can we add in here maybe a paragraph that says, you know, maybe look at what St. Louis is doing, if they're able to somehow still kind of keep and reword, I don't know, kind of reword or whatever, and keep their board intact, maybe look at that as a model also. Because, you know, we have like different what ifs in here. Maybe add that also as a what if.
That makes sense. So, in effect, we're focusing on St. Louis because we think that's where the action is. But why don't
any other municipality in Missouri?
Look what other municipalities in Missouri have done and see if they have presented a model that would be useful in keeping a single board intact and having a wider function.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I'm going to make a quick note, Xavier, on that.
Okay.
And what I'm going to suggest is that we'll bring that back maybe next time.
Okay.
When we're looking at municipalities. Yeah. So, and I think the spirit of it, what I'm hearing from you, Xavier, is that to keep. I'll put it in my folksy way first.
Yeah.
To keep both policy and discipline under one roof.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's really what we're talking about. If other municipalities found a way to do that.
Because if we don't have to split it into two, and someone else is doing it to where we're still able to somehow be one, then maybe let's
what
do that until.
Like?
So I am newest here. So this is my opinion that is not the most educated. I firmly believe that eyeballs are more powerful than teeth, and I feel that if we were to stick to a one-board solution and simply relinquish the power to actually discipline an individual officer, but still have access to view anything that was processed as a complaint and only be able to issue system-wide, policy-wide statements, and we could not target an individual officer, that would be a reasonable compromise in allowing us eyeballs, audit eyeballs, on what we know needs to be seen, but taking away our ability to what an officer might perceive as like a short-term political influence and people over them, taking away our ability to discipline through the board. But again,
so if I'm understanding where that is going, Steph, you're saying even if other municipalities have come up with what we'll call a unified board solution, you're thinking there are real advantages to two board solutions, so you don't want to become...
Oh, no, this is just what I'm throwing out as the Stephanie board solution.
I think then where we are on this would appear to be laying out three different paths forward. One is to go with the two-board solution, one is to go with the one-board solution and find another way to do discipline, and one would be finding out with some other municipalities, and I think that's a great idea. Brains have been working on this all over the state. Why don't we find out, you know, what they've managed to come up with? And it may be even, when I think about it, and I haven't done the research on this, but I would not be surprised if other states have face the same problem, and
there's at least a couple more states that I think Tennessee's even one that did this.
Mm-hmm.
They did this exact same thing. So there are other states that have put this ban in place. So there may be other solutions in other states.
Right. So I would hope that the city would help advocate for forward-thinking solutions instead of immediately folding their hands and being like, "Well, not anything we can do."
Some of the confusions that, you know, as I listen to each of us talking about, you know, possible solutions, is we never have had the power to discipline an officer.
Right.
Right.
We're a board that looks at things, makes recommendations, and then...
A recommendation at most.
Does our recommendation go anywhere? I mean, we hope so. We make a motion to send it to the police chief and the police department. We don't know that they followed... I mean, we sometimes know that they've, you know, considered it and followed through with it. But I feel like a lot of this is we really don't have any power.
Yeah.
So we're like, are we trying to obtain power in this board that we're, you know, if we're going to be presenting, is there a way that we can gain power? Or is it going to, you know, are we recommending that we kind of keep doing what we're doing and just a recommendations board?
A good question. I guess one of the things that I would say, and I very much see what you're saying, so much of what we has to be done in closed session, the public doesn't even know what we're doing.
Right.
I mean, and sometimes it's a little hard for us to tell what the consequence is. But words said in public venues in front of the public and communicated to the city council clearly have force. And so I do feel that, you know, that's a robust way to get citizen input. So in that sense, and I don't know if that's the sense you're thinking of, that I feel that it is increasing, in a sense, the power of civilian oversight, but not oversight over particular officers, oversight over the system,
yes.
Right? Oversight over the system. So, you know, again, the analogy to workers' rights came very strongly to me. You might want to sue an individual employee of some corporation because of something that they did wrong. We ought to ask yourself what management did to train, hire. You know, maybe sometimes the right answer is not to to put it in coarser terms than I feel, decide who to throw under the bus here. But something's gone wrong, so let's look at the system. And I think that does increase the power. I really do think that increases the power, but probably better. Other observations, that's a good question. Very much what I was meaning in terms of...
Just wording confusions, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, when I was saying before, I like to think that we're not just mitigating damage done by a change in the law, but we're actually finding a way to improve. You know?
I would say, yes, a better transfer of more sustainable and mutual power so that maybe... the board and the police department can even improve that relationship eventually if we were to take away that singling out. But I'm unsure how the public might feel, you know, about their having that taken away.
Right.
And I understand why they would be concerned.
Exactly. Other questions, comments? To go back to the discussion of the, what I'm going to think of as the Xavier addition here, is I think we'll widen our search to say not just what Missouri, but other what might have happened in other states was similar. Okay. Right. And if you guys are comfortable with it, because I do not trust my brain on spontaneous things, we've just got a couple of things that have been mentioned so far that I would like to actually draft up things for us to add in if we want to next time, rather than try to make something up on the fly. But we do have the advantage of a meeting upcoming soon, so we could be able to do that.
The law goes into effect
20 weeks.
This month. Of the
28th of this month, right. Yeah. And I think one of the things that means from my point of view is if we're going to have at least a meeting where a discussion of how to deal with SB 754 is done, and it's going to be announced that that's going on, today and tomorrow are it. So if we don't get something out there, I think we could regret it later on.
There are members of the public here, so before you take a vote, you might consider letting them comment if they wish on this issue.
That's an excellent idea. So what I'm going to do, what I would suggest that we might be able to do, because we've got two slight amendments to this, I would welcome the idea of just putting it on the table. Come back next meeting. I don't that put you in an awkward position in a sense because you're not going to be here, Stephen, but you can certainly express an opinion. Put the motion on the table, get a second to it, and then table it for finalization at the next meeting. That also, I think, has the advantage of giving members of the public yet one more chance to give such input as they want to give before we finalize it. Does that make sense? Yep. Okay, so let's go through the formality. I move the document, which I will not read over again, be adopted to express the board's response to SB 754.
I second that.
Been moved and seconded to make this our response to 754. Does anybody, before we vote, want to move to table this motion until next time?
I move to table it.
Got a motion to table? Second? Anybody?
I second it.
Okay.
Then, tabling it to tomorrow's agenda?
Yep. Can that be done?
It can be, but I wanted to be clear you wanted that as compared to your next regular meeting.
I think we'd better get on with it because of the 28th deadline coming up on us.
Is tomorrow's meeting just a closed meeting?
It doesn't have to be just a closed meeting.
Okay.
And in fact, I think all meetings start as open and then we move to go into closed session. Is that not correct, Rose?
That is correct, but the only item that we had advertised was the closed session.
Right. Do you think that creates a problem in terms of improper posting? So you're saying that we really couldn't do it at tomorrow's meeting?
Could we table it to the end of this meeting until we get the public comment? Or
I don't see why we couldn't. Why can't we just move? It's an alteration of the agenda, which we didn't do earlier, but why don't we alter the agenda to invite public comment now before we take a vote? We can take the vote and then we can amend at some later point. You know, we can decide.
So is the motion to table
responded? I withdraw that motion.
Yep. Yep. So the motion is still on the table. That's an interesting question. You know, let's not get hung up on Robert's Rules of Order. Let's agree on what we're trying to do here. That is, we do want to vote on this motion, but we want to wait until after we give a period of public comment to do it, and then we will return to this. So however we think of it in terms of parliamentary procedure, we're leaving the motion as moved and seconded on the table while we move on the agenda so that we can get on to other things and invite public comment, and then we'll return to it. Does that satisfy people?
In theory, what you're doing is having the public comment during public comment generally, not on this specific issue. Is that what you're trying to do, or just moving this down to later in the agenda?
We have public comment specific to this, like now.
Yes. Is that allowed?
Have regular public
comment later. Let's do it right now, then. let's hear what the public has to say. I think those of you who are here have heard the discussion, and All comments are welcome. Where this is going to be just like our regular comment period. I think we'll do the 5-minute rule and the three-minute rule. And we'll see whether people want to respond. But
it's only regarding this motion.
Only regarding this motion. Okay. Acceptable to everybody? That's by consensus, I think. And would any member of the public like to comment?
Comments at the end of public comment. And I'm also one of probably the most common person to come up and say what individual officers have done wrong. One of the reasons why we want to do this, why it's important so that you can see this, is so that you can see when you can see that pattern. We have seen a pattern of irresponsibility from specific officers. The foremost officer that comes to mind is Robert Fox. I've spoken to you guys about Robert Fox before. He has had several things from the in the public where he has said racist things to people of the that he's detained. He has illegally detained people. He has been violent towards people. It's been suggested he might have planted evidence at points of time. He was involved when Jeff Jones harmed two black teenagers. He has maced a dog. All these things. Now, if you did not know that, if you did not hear people from the public stating things, you might know that he's not a repetitive problem. I noticed that when I said his name, several of you actually recognized the name because I've said it up here often enough. Now, what should have happened was that Paul Dickinson should have fired or should have recommended to fire Robert years ago. But yet, Paul, you haven't. Really ashamed of you for not doing that. I've got my own problems with Paul, but that's besides the point. Now, it's clear that you guys did not attend the Race Matters Friends Roundtable a couple of weeks ago, because if you would have, you would have known that David Tyson Smith was in on the writing of this bill. He was trying to lessen it. He's still trying to lessen it. But if you were in on that meeting, you would have heard David Tyson Smith, our representative here from Columbia, that said that he was in on it, and they were trying to very specifically target St. Louis and Springfield, or sorry, St. Louis and Kansas City. They were not trying to target us, and in fact, when he looked at the law, as he is a lawyer,
30 seconds,
he said that it would not affect, if you actually looked at the law, then what Nancy told you last month was not true, and if you actually read the law, it meant that Columbia did not have to change a single thing that Columbia CPRB does. So before you take this vote, I am asking, because I know that, Doug, that you have met with a couple of lawyers, but you've not met with David Tyson Smith, to my knowledge, because if you had, David Tyson Smith, a writer of this law, co-writer of this law, would have said that you did not need to change a thing, and Nancy was wrong. Thank you.
Thank you.
Susan Renee Carter, on behalf of Race Matters Friends. I'd like 5 minutes just in case I need it. So I'll follow up a little bit on what Chris was talking about. As she said, David Tyson Smith, he was at our forum on August 4th, and he would be very appalled to hear the discussion tonight about how citizens, you know, shouldn't be coming up and talking about individual officers. And if you heard his personal stories, as a child, and his stories as a lawyer and what he's witnessed, you would understand why you need to hear people's stories and about what's happened to them. So he could not be here this evening, but he did report to us that this bill had all sorts of things in it. And as Chris mentioned, he worked with those people who were sponsoring the bill to try to trim it down, but it was too late because it wouldn't have passed. He did have Reese Ellis, who is on this board, speak to the legislators about the impact of what they were doing. And so I feel like if he could be here tonight, and if Reese was here tonight, we would hear different opinions about the direction that you should take. So I don't want to put too many words in his mouth about what he said about the bill, but he also brought up in his comments about there are conflicting legislation, and he does not see why you cannot continue acting in the manner that you are. None of you are disciplined police officers. You're auditing, you're making recommendations. He also felt like you need to challenge the fact that the legislation is conflicting. Right? Because if two pieces of legislation, two laws, do not match, and what you're doing right now has been productive so far on this board until this evening, then you need to challenge that in a court of law. And you need to continue doing what it is that you're doing. Because this is, since the beginning of the board, when it started, it was meant to do what it's doing. The lawyer for the CPOA, David, said he does not know what he's talking about, that this board has not overreached, and it's doing exactly what it was intended to do. It's been productive since this group has been on here. It's been useful. People feel listened to. This is not a police board about police. It's about citizens who have complaints. And they need to be able to come up here and tell you what their individual complaints are. They need to be able to file complaints. They need somebody to listen to them, because police officers, they have CPOA, they have other people who protect them. You were made up because citizens need protection. And David sees this in his office every day, people who come in and talk to him. So I'm suggesting that before we start talking about how horribly policemen are being treated, that we talk to David Tyson Smith and try to work with him, because he plans on going back and getting this reversed, or at least carving out Columbia. He worked hard to get this board put together for the very reasons that it's trying to be taken down. And he also said
30 seconds.
That the police officer should not be sitting here, and he should not be sitting here in a uniform. He should be, if he comes, he should be in plain clothes in the audience. And he told this board that, and he stands by that. And he told me I needed to push you on that. That person, there's nothing wrong with him, but that's intimidating to the people who are coming here hoping to get justice. Thank you.
Other comments
Thank
from
you.
Members of the public? I do feel like I need to respond to a couple of things. There's nothing in the in any proposal that would keep members of the public from coming up and speaking about what their concerns are and things that have happened and naming names and so on and so forth. That's allowed under every iteration that we have here, I think. And the other one, just for clarification, is that this proposal was run by Reese Ellis, who made a couple of typographical suggestions and said, that's exactly right. So it's not that it hasn't been run by Reese, at least.
Well, and I do understand what she's saying, because yes, we want the public to be able to come up. But if it is a closed session, then you're not given that opportunity. So I hear you.
Yeah, but again, my understanding is that all meetings will start with an open session, and at the session, there will always be an opportunity for public comment.
Yeah.
It's just what I'm saying is most of the work that this board actually does will be confined to open session. They can certainly hear from the public. It will be done during
closed session. Okay.
But they can certainly hear from the public anything the public wants to say during open session. Right, exactly. Yeah.
In addition to that, you would still have training on police policies and procedures. That would also occur in open session. So the public would be able to, you know, hear that and see those trainings as well. You just wouldn't be necessarily doing the dinner policy meetings that you had for public input process. That could be a function of city staff could take that on if that's something that was important to be done. Consider that as well.
Other comments from public staff or on this subject again, members of the board? I think we might be in a position, when I look at the amendments that were suggested, I think I might be in a position to read those out and get them done now instead of, because one was a very simple addition, the one that Harry mentioned, and we added to the third item in the list under number two at the end, if allowed by Senate Bill 754, right? And then I think I've come up with wording, and I, again, Xavier, I'm accepting this as a friendly amendment if it makes sense to you. And I have to read my own handwriting, so I apologize if it takes me a little while. We should investigate what municipalities and Missouri and other states have done to keep policy and discipline under the purview of a single board and see if that model can be followed. Okay. And again, because that's a friendly amendment, I don't think we need a motion to change it before we look at the whole. Okay.
Should we consider adding maybe a recommendation to reach out to David to understand the bill further?
Reese does communicate.
I mean the city council, not us.
Oh, okay.
I mean in this, to the city council. The attorney, whoever. Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't have a strong feeling about that. I had considered at one point Ashley Heibarger, who's the national expert that I talked to, suggesting that somebody reach out to him. But I just don't know how I feel about recommending this particular lawyer or that particular lawyer
right. In
a question where lawyers are going to dispute, because it begins to look like you're picking the lawyer that's going to agree with you right. In order
okay.
to recommend
your calls,
somebody.
Yeah.
Well, since he helped write it, that would be, well, I don't know, from the attorney perspective,
would you like to suggest that?
It would go, but it's just a thought.
Yeah. I'm not averse to.
Do you recommend he talk to the city council, or what is
yeah.
your
so. Motion to invite him in or to a meeting?
Meeting of our?
No, I think it goes to the city council since we can't make any decisions.
Okay.
So, yeah,
in 2 weeks, this goes into bill, effect, so we're limited.
I want to hear the sense, because I don't have a strong feeling on this, and I want to hear what other people on the board are thinking. Should we include this as an additional recommendation?
And what specifically are you talking about?
I just feel like from hearing from the public comments,
I feel like that's an important piece of this that we aren't necessarily privy to at this moment because we have not spoken with him. We weren't at the meeting that he was at. So if it's inviting him to speak with city council about the bill, if it's a recommendation that they reach out to him, I don't know what it should say, but it's just a thought that...
I don't think we can probably invite him to somebody else's meeting. We could perhaps encourage the city council to invite... Yes.
What I would suggest is in your memo with, you know, whatever motion passes, the report that goes to council, that you include that you heard from members of the public
and
summarize what they said.
Okay.
Because then they'll have that information
and
they can then reach out to
him. And I think it's clear what we heard. So let's consider that. So if I'm following what Rose is saying, usually there's a little cover, so to speak,
cover letter
in effect, that is attached before the motion gets there. And at that point, so we say it came out of this board meeting. We also heard from the public this. These are the recommendations that we're making. Sort of.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. Is that agreeable? Let's consider that consensus again. Okay, with that discussion done and those badly handwritten motions that I just... did read out to you, so I think we understood it. Are we ready to vote then on this?
Yes.
I don't think, well, I just want to say one thing, and this it does have to be in the motion, but I mean, it is my sincerest hope that Columbia was not part of this, right? And so if we're not, you know, I would love for us to still be intact. That is my sincerest hope.
I think we all agree on that. Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to say that, but I don't think it needs to be any language added in here, but.
Yes.
And that could be in the cover letter as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Why don't?
Step one, our first request is for nothing to happen.
Yeah.
Because people are telling us that David Tyson Smith says that this law somehow does not apply to us. Great. Let's just go back to the way things were then.
I actually am going to suggest the way that we can write that into the motion, because it would be simply an unless clause attached to item one on the front. Unless it is learned that it is possible to preserve the present board CPRB board structure.
Iteration structure?
Yeah. Board. We might want to mention duties, because that's the way it's always being expressed. Maybe structure and duties. Okay. And that actually, I think, comes out strangely coherent. Unless it is learned that it is possible to preserve the present CPRB board structure and duties intact, replace the CPRB with two boards. So I think that implies pretty strongly that our first move is, let's see if we can just keep it intact.
Yes.
If not, let's go to plan B, in effect. Yeah. Is that agreeable?
Yes.
Okay. Any other suggestions before we move to a vote? Okay, it has actually already been moved and seconded that we send this to the council as our recommendation. If there's no further discussion, I think it's time for a vote on this. It strikes me as a major move. I don't know, Rose, you might advise us on this. We could just do a voice vote. Does this strike you as being important enough that we should be doing a roll call?
I think so, just simply because if someone says no, it'll be hard for me to tell who.
Okay. So let's
abstains.
Let's do a roll call vote then.
Do you want me to call the names?
Great.
Denise?
Yes.
Harry?
Yes.
Steph?
Yes.
Jamie?
Yes.
Doug?
Yes.
Stephen?
Yes.
Xavier?
Yes.
And Steph?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you for that hard work.
Seriously.
Yeah, thank you, Doug.
We're at the point in the thing where agenda where we talk about productive outreach efforts. Does anybody have anything to say about either? I'm sorry.
I had noticed that we had received, I think, a notification from Rose about the National Night Owl. With the first Tuesday in August. And if we put that on our calendar now, if that's always the first Tuesday in August, I think that we should start, as you're saying, our outreach, find things that we want to be involved in, get it on our calendar, and make a plan. You know, we should have some kind of presentation, some type of information that we're able to share with the public and really let people know who aren't aware that we're here and we really want the public to come and help us do this right. And I think the systemic change is what we should definitely be looking at, not individuals as much. But anyway, I was just going to make a suggestion that if we have a calendar that we get that on and start looking at other events like that ahead of time instead of finding out 2 weeks before and going, oh, can't go.
Yeah, right.
We got nothing, you know, to offer anyway, even if we show up. So we need to start thinking about that.
Right.
The Human Rights Commission does tabling events throughout the year, which I thought that this board did, and then I got on and realized it didn't, but I still like it here. I love tabling events concerning stuff like this, educating people on like flex your rights, know your rights. Like, you know, I think all of these things can be useful if we have time.
Exactly. Good points. Any other observations on outreach efforts? Audits of complaints and status updates. Somebody else may have more brain left in their head than I, but I think what we can report is that once again we have working groups that have divided things up and are doing some audits, which we'll be looking at in closed session, and that given the calendar that we're operating under, this would appear to be the end of our audit season when we get done with those tonight. And so we can then begin to be in a position to summarize where we stand on them. Other than that, I don't know what to report exactly. Anybody? And again, since we're in a public setting, I'll remind the public that we chose most frequent areas of complaint to audit or most problematic areas to audit. Instead of doing a random audit, you could probably do one either way, but that was our approach, and we're pretty far along on that. Okay. New business, future meeting schedule.
To be determined?
Don't know. So because the law is changing, there will be changes to the ordinance to adjust. The ordinance currently reads that the board shall meet monthly. So one of the questions was, do you want to continue to meet monthly, or do you want to meet quarterly or some other schedule? I personally think it will be much easier to have a monthly meeting on your all's calendar, so that if appeals come in, you know, we know that we can hear them at that next monthly meeting, as compared to if you met quarterly and then suddenly we had to have special meetings. It would be harder to get you all together and have a quorum together. That would also, the regular monthly meeting could also be used for training, and you know, the police could do presentations on police policies, and there could be that educational component so that you can better do your job by continuing to be educated on policies and laws involved in the work you do.
It would also provide a reliable schedule for public comment. If the public wants to come, they know that we're available instead of
monthly
and predictable way.
And if it turns out that, you know, we don't have anything that we need to look at, then we can use the time together to work on our presentations for our public outreach. You know, we have other things that we could do to fill that time. So
and
I think we should keep it monthly.
If there truly isn't anything, they can be canceled then, in theory.
I think, Rose, that I understand the presence of televising meetings, given that unless there's some strong change on what our present understanding of SB 754 going into effect would be that most of our business is done in closed session anyhow. We're not doing any motions or any votes in open session. Whether we should be televising these sessions, which I assume involves complications and expense and all that sort of stuff, is what I think we're discussing here. Is that essentially it, Rose?
Yeah, it's just depending upon how you want to proceed. I mean, if you want it to stay the same, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Because it is presumed that your monthly meeting will be televised.
You know,
if you felt otherwise, if you thought, well, you know, if we're limiting our scope of our work, we don't necessarily want to be televised, then you would have to pass a motion to send a report to council to request council consider that decision. It's the council who decided to televise and
keep
have the broadcast.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
fine
yeah.
with
televised.
That's what I'm thinking, too. It is an irrevocable decision to say, let's keep doing things the way we are, monthly and televised.
Yeah.
And then if we find out that that's not necessary or doesn't make sense, we can.
Yeah.
So no
down the road.
No action
in the universe.
Items for next month's agenda. really is almost too complicated to consider at this point because we don't know what our powers are going to be at next month's meeting. But nonetheless, is there something that somebody would encourage us to be doing at next month's agenda should we be able to?
Is anyone going to the NACOL conference? Were we able to send anyone this year?
Yes.
Yes. Awesome.
We have put in for time off. So,
I believe Denise, you also were going.
I'm going to, yeah. You gonna go?
So that paperwork is being processed.
I'm excited.
I'll go next year.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on. Reports. Human Rights Commission.
The Human Rights Commission, due to the timing of these meetings, has not actually met since the Police Review Board last met. We typically do not have an issue with quorum, but I believe it's just because of the summer holiday. We did not meet this past month, and our makeup meeting is on the 22nd of August, so I have nothing.
All right, good. And any reports on positive connections, training, and ride-alongs?
I did do a ride-along July 25th, 8 o'clock to midnight. We made quite a few, well, not quite a few. We made a few car stops, and I was able to go, you know, as far as I felt comfortable, he allowed me to go with him to the stops. So just to be able to hear good positive communication with the individuals that, you know, that he was stopping and all that. It was a pretty good evening. Okay. Very quiet, actually, for a Thursday night. Very quiet.
Good. Any other positive connections or training or ride-along? Okay, now, on our agenda is general comments by the public, members, and staff, and I think we should keep that and see if there is our issues other than SB 754 that people want to make comments about. We'll turn, as usual, we'll turn to the public first. And any comments from the public? Where are we? Here we go.
Chris Jones, Second Ward. I'm speaking on behalf of Como Accountable. I would like my 5 minutes, please. Tonight, I am up here to talk about a topic that I have brought up many times in front of you. This month is the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of this event happening. I'm going to read from an article called MindSight News. It is a national publication on mental health. The article is called, "If Mental Health Responders, Not Police, Had Come to Marquise Rivera's Home, Would He Be Alive Today?" This is in regards to a shooting that happened last August. Marquise Rivera was going to kill himself. He said so to 911 dispatcher right before he hung up, and he was in a picture of distress when officers George Chang and Andrew Gilstrap arrived at his apartment complex in Columbia, Missouri, with their body cameras rolling. During that first encounter on August 4th, 2023, Rivera, sitting shirtless on his front porch, shakes his leg and hands, says little and says, mm-hmm, when asked if he's planning to hurt himself. At one point, he says, just let me do what I gotta do. At another point, Officer Chang goes to his car, calls Rivera's ex-girlfriend, and learns that Rivera owns a gun. Back on the porch, Officer Chang asks several times if Rivera wants to go to the hospital or talk to a psychiatrist. Rivera shakes his head and later says he won't talk to them. Chang says he might compel him to go, but in the end, he does not. Rivera tells the officers he's going to go back inside and play video games, and they walk away. 6 minutes later, Rivera, a 22-year-old black man, calls 911 again. Please just ask those officers, those police to get back over here, he tells the same dispatcher. When Chang and Gilstrap pull up to the complex for the second time, Rivera's crisis had escalated, and this time he's holding his gun. For the next several minutes, additional police cars roll up, sirens blaring, At least 8 officers are now on scene, many of them with their guns drawn. The standoff continues for around 20 minutes and then becomes fatal. In this situation, commonly referred to as suicide by cop, a distressed Rivera raises his gun. An officer shoots and kills him in front of his apartment. The encounter didn't have to end that way, his loved ones say. And in time leading up to the fatal moment were several opportunities for police to get Rivera help. So many gray areas, red flags, said Rivera's stepfather, Ralph Edwards, in an emotional interview nearly a year after his son was killed. If they would have had any kind of sense, if they would have had the right training in their own mind to be able to help my son and get him to the situation that he was in, he would be alive today. But it didn't happen. His stepfather is a trained mental health counselor that works with the police. The desperate call that Marquise Rivera placed to 911 that day are common occurrences in Colombia, as in most of the country. In 2021 and 2022, the most common years for which the data is available, the city's police department received 3,352 mental health-related 911 calls, and almost half of them involved people who were potentially suicidal. That's an average of 4.6 per day. In 2023, Columbia put out a request for proposal seeking outside contractors to operate the co-responder service and received an application from Burrell Behavioral Health, an agency that operates in 18 Missouri counties, and since 2022 has run a co-response program in Springfield, Missouri, 160 miles southwest of Columbia.
1 minute.
But in March, Police Chief Jill Schluti told council members the department needed to press the pause button, and Burrell spokesperson said in an email that the discussion with the city was on hold. The department declined requests for comment. Rivera called 911 for the first time at 3:05 that summer afternoon. The police arrived 21 minutes later. He sat on his porch, staring straight ahead as Chang and Gilstrap approached.
30 seconds.
I'm going to pause right now, but I have underlined several other things in this article that I want you to read. I'm going to give this article to Rose. Rose, I am asking you to please scan this and distribute it to each of these people on the board tonight, because this is words from Marquise's mother, the mother of a man who died at police's hands. He should not have died. Thank you.
No.
3 minutes. I'm not with anyone.
Sure.
So my name is Meg Ladd. I'm a resident in Boone County, have been since 1989, and I was the partner to David Strumpf. He was tragically murdered on January 18th of this year. So I'm here regarding the CPRB 2024 009 appeal involving the personal property of David Strumpf. It was seized by the Columbia Police Department after it was determined to be a stolen item from the crime scene. So David's son murdered him, took the vehicle, and the police had it. So in the days and weeks following David's death, I made numerous attempts to contact the detectives in the prosecutor's office in the hopes that we could have access to the seized vehicle. I made phone calls, sent text messages, emails, and left voicemails listing the documents, keepsakes, and invaluable items that I knew would still be in the car. When inquiring on the status of the vehicle, I was often met with short and vague responses from detectives. Thank you. Instructing me to continue to check in with the prosecuting attorney's office. I was told each time that the vehicle was not yet released due to the public defender needing to potentially obtain more evidence. So over the course of 4 months, so January to April, I reached out to detectives, I reached out to the prosecutor's office regularly. On April 18th, there was a court date. It was about the vehicle and the attorneys needing more time to access the vehicle. I was informed by the prosecuting attorney's office and later David's attorney that the police no longer had the vehicle in their possession and that it had been released to I-70 towing as an abandoned vehicle. Immediately after receiving the news that David's vehicle had been released to I-70 towing, David's mother, business partner, and myself contacted I-70 towing and were informed that they had legal rights over the vehicle because it had been claimed. It had not been claimed. We did involve David's attorney and were instructed to deliver letters to the CPD, I-70 towing, and the prosecutor's office, which we did, but it was too late. Minimal contents, including only the crime evidence, were collected from the vehicle. The remaining items were cleared out to our understanding before I-70 received the vehicle. I-70 also informed us that the vehicle was towed to their lot on January 28th. That was one day after David's funeral.
30 seconds.
There was no communication with me or any other parties involved before it was sold. I cannot overstate how confusing and upsetting this information was to receive. David utilized his vehicle as a portable workspace and kept all relevant work information with him. Because of the failure by detectives to communicate, those of us involved in David's life and dealings after have suffered an immense loss in both his personal and professional matters. I'm confident that there were numerous documents pertaining to the most important elements of David's life preceding his death. Again, this was not an abandoned vehicle. This was a vehicle of a brilliant, vibrant, involved member of our community. As family and friends work to piece together all the information that has been required following David's sudden death, it has been remarkably burdensome and exhausting to obtain the lost information. I hope this type of negligence doesn't happen again in the future, and I am willing to attend the closed session discussion of this appeal if I'm invited to do so. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the public or from members?
I have one more question about SB 754. Rose, given all of what we found out, will we receive maybe some kind of correspondence saying, like, this is what it is, this is how to go about things, or anything like that from the city council or from the law department?
The city councilor, Nancy Thompson, had put together a memo that was attached to the agenda for the council in their consideration, along with a preliminary draft of the proposed ordinance. I know after she and I met with Doug yesterday and he made some comments, I know she's planning to make a few revisions to the draft ordinance to address some of the things that Doug raised in the meeting. And I also know that she has heard from the Columbia Police Officers Association, and she's also factoring in some of their comments as well. But other than that, your motion will go as a report to the council. We'll try and get on the next council agenda. Because this involves changes to an ordinance, there will be two reads to the ordinance. And did they do the first read the other night?
I don't think so.
That was just a report. So the first read will be the first meeting in September, and then the second read will be, no, is that right?
No.
Is it making this next agenda? I'll find out for sure which two meetings it's going to be on, but there'll basically be two council meetings where they'll, you know, the ordinance will be presented and the public can then make comments at that second meeting. What's critically important is that we align our ordinance within the confines of the new law before, as soon as we can thereafter, because we don't want there to be a long period of time where someone could then say our ordinance as a whole is void. So we need to rein it within the new statute. And so the city councilor has worked very carefully to do that and still preserve as much as she possibly can in how you are functioning in the current model that exists in Columbia. And there will be procedural changes, but the very first thing would be to look at what council adopts. And so with regard to next month's agenda, I will have an update and then we'll probably go over the draft that is proceeding at that point. Look at that.
Any other comments by members or staff? I'll go ahead and make, well, actually, I do want to, because we should discuss this before we vanish into closed session. And Rose, I want some help here because we've got a request to appear before the closed session. And I will give my amateur explanation and then we'll turn to Rose. If a citizen wants to come and speak in a closed session, what they can do is make a statement but not be present during deliberations. You've made a statement. If you feel that there's more that needs to be said, we would certainly consider inviting you. But it would, the effect would be not that you could be there for the deliberations. I'm just sorry, that's our rules.
So, if I may, yeah. What would have to happen is once you pass your motion to go into closed session, if the board members determine first that they have jurisdiction, then the board could consider the request. And if you wanted to invite her into closed session, then you would need to pass a motion to invite her into closed session. And that period of time would be to give a statement and or answer questions of the board. And then she would leave closed session at that point.
Yeah. And, so, and yeah, that's a fair statement of the rules. And I guess just in terms of trying to put you in a position to make your best decision, let us know whether you are still interested in appearing. Now, understanding the rules, are you still interested before we go into closed session in being invited into the closed session? Okay. She is still interested. Okay.
So, ma'am, if once they adjourn into closed session, if you could wait down here in the lobby and they'll have a little bit of business they have to take care of, determining jurisdiction and seeing if the motion passes, and then one of us will come down and get you and bring you up if they pass the motion. And if they don't pass the motion, I'm hoping one of these nice gentlemen here will come running down and let you know so you don't have to wait around.
That having been cleared up, I'll go ahead and move that we go into closed session to discuss records which are protected from disclosure by state law, section 610.21, paren 14, pardon?
021.
Oh, thank you very much. 021 and 590.502 RISMO. The board will meet in conference room 2A for a closed session to review CPRB 2024-008 and CPRB 2024-009 and to do analysis of 2023 complaints. So there's the motion.
Second.
Second.
This is a roll call vote. Denise?
Yes.
Harry?
Yes.
Stephanie?
Yes.
Doug?
Yes.
Steven?
Yes.
Xavier?
Yes.
Jamie?
Yes.
Steph?
Yes.
Okay, that's okay.
Order, and then I was like, why did she call me Steph?